Sci-Fi.
Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me I have Colin and Stuart, the Vicious Brothers, here to talk about their newest feature film, Extraterrestrial. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
First off, I'd like to say the visuals on this movie were impressive. I was fascinated and tickled pink by the quality of the special effects and the cinematography. Usually these days, horror movies are too dark. You can't distinguish between features and people and backgrounds. This was gorgeous. So thank you for that.
Thank you for acknowledging it.
What sort of process was it to come up with this story? Why choose sci-fi plus horror?
I think we always just wanted to take the alien abduction subgenre, which, you know, has its roots in, I think, a bit more in science fiction than in horror, and put it in a purely horror setting where we would take a very cliche setup that's become even more cliche in the past 5 years. I think it's worth noting that, you know, when we wrote the very first draft of this script, which is, you know, to say that it starts out as a small cabin in the woods horror film, it was 8 years ago, pre kind of cabin in the woods film onslaught that we've all encountered in the past few years. So, you know, we were inspired by the idea of taking this very familiar horror setup and then throwing it on its head and turning it into a crazy science fiction film in the final act and going on a journey that nobody could really see coming.
So the inclusion of every single trope from every single cult movie since 1982 was intentional?
Absolutely, because, you know, that stuff is just great, you know, material, and we kind of just felt like it hadn't really been done before. I mean, there's plenty of movies about aliens, but for whatever reason, they're usually not tackled from the point of view of what is sort of the accepted mythos on aliens, which just, you know, flying saucers and gray aliens with black eyes and Area 51 and government cover-ups and Roswell and all that stuff. For whatever reason, most people try to take it in some kind of different direction. And for us, you know,
that was always the most fun direction to watch growing up.
Yeah, because that's kind of if aliens exist, that's probably what the scenario really is like, and that makes it inherently more kind of interesting and scary to us.
Well, there's that one old saying, we should do everything possible not to attract their attention because we're not ready.
If there's anything like in this movie, we definitely do not want to attract their attention whatsoever.
So what was the actual growth of the story process? Because the story itself is what I have a lot of questions about.
Well, I mean, we first wrote it when we were both like 23 or so, 22, 23. And the first draft actually had a lot of the elements that remain to the finished film, like the ship crashing and the kids going out to see it and discovering it's a UFO, and
it evolved a ton of them.
Yeah, there are some main scenes stayed in there, but I mean, the first draft had no character development or anything whatsoever, and that's the stuff that we began to add as we kept looking at it again and again over the years.
Yeah, the one theme that one of my co-reviewers, Darren, hit upon that he was very intrigued by was this running undercurrent of loss. You have April dealing with the loss of her parents' marriage. You have Kyle eventually dealing with losing April. You have all of these undercurrents of loss. Was that an intentional direction you wanted to go with all of these characters to build towards the end?
I think we wanted to go more towards hope, really, and then,
you know, and then pull it away in a really hilariously dramatic and sudden fashion at the end. I mean, April hopes that, you know, even though she's broken and bitter due to her parents' divorce, she hopes deep down that, you know, there is such a thing as a soulmate, and there's more out there in the world than just loneliness. And I think at a certain point, you know, it's a pretty obvious metaphor, but just the mere fact of a UFO crash landing to Earth kind of forces her to realize that, you know, she's not alone. So I think we were more on the side of that versus the side of loss, but I can see how ultimately in the end of the film, which has a bleak, darker ending, you can definitely take away loss more than hope.
Yeah, that ending was rather sudden and unexpected. It, for me personally, I thought it was a letdown from what the rest of the movie was building up towards. What was the inspiration to go in that direction?
I think it's a horror movie. You know, although we have a love story, we are vicious brothers, and we do want to take things in a darker direction. You know, honestly, it's just one of those things when you're
writing. My favorite thing about the film.
Yeah, it's like when you're writing a script, sometimes you don't totally know why. It just seems thematically and structurally, it seemed right that after these characters go through this horrific ordeal with the aliens and survive them against all odds, spoiler, that the humans would end up being the ones who were ultimately the biggest threat of all. I mean, it just thematically works. Exactly what Mike Weinstein's crazy conspiracy Vietnam theorist character predicts, essentially. Yeah.
And that's where I actually thought you were going with it, by having Travis tell them his experiences with the conspiracy theories. I figured at the end you'd have April and Kyle carry on that conspiracy theory and be on the run, being chased by these people because these guys didn't catch them and eliminate them. They have this loose thread out there. And then you've got them on the run for the rest of their lives, and that's a little bit darker than just having it end.
That would be one way for sure. maybe we did have a version that ended similar.
Really?
Well, yeah, I think that we've gotten tired of a lot of films these days, like have a sequel planned before the movie is even out. And the end of the film is just kind of like, and this is the end of this chapter, but there'll be another chapter. And we wanted to make a film that, of course, there could be a sequel, potentially, if there's a demand for it. But certainly we wanted to make something that was a closed story, you know, that was its own thing entirely.
I would have been happy with, like, you know, the black screen epilogue saying, and they were on the run for the rest of their lives, never knowing what really happened, period. well, it's just a matter of taste. I really love story, and I was really hoping this was going to go to a place where I'll go, yeah, this is going to be a cult classic, and it didn't quite get there. But like I said, the visuals and the everyone has their different taste. But for me, the visuals and the production design put this back up on the, hey, this is really cool list. So what went into the design of the interior of the alien ship? Because that was unexpected and kind of cool.
I think we were definitely inspired by, Ridley Scott's Alien and Prometheus and the design work of H.R. Giger. The design came together. I don't think we ever discussed any other designs. We knew we wanted to do something like that. It would be sort of half mechanical, half organic looking. For whatever reason, that just seems to play really well.
I feel like the inside bowels of, like, a beast that you're basically inside to, you know. I think I couldn't imagine a version where it was, like, shiny and glossy and looked like clean version. I think our aliens are dirty, messy, gross. They like to enter through the butthole, you know.
And I, seeing that, it sort of, for me anyway, reinforced how little regard they have for humans. They're like, these little creatures are nothing more than garbage to us, so it doesn't matter how we keep them, what we do to them. It sort of reinforced for me the literally the complete disregard for humanity and the complete disregard for just there's all darkness, no empathy.
Yeah, that's what they wanted to make that torture scene to be a machine as opposed to it being an alien that was there face to face with him. It was just this really impersonal, sort of horrifying medical, clinical thing that happens to him, which kind of just makes it even scarier.
I was really hoping that Seth's would meet a messy demise earlier in the film, because he's got that one kind of character who you just want to strangle from the moment he first opens his mouth. So kudos on that. You have the person, you're like, okay, that's who I'm rooting for to die messy.
Yeah, it's very much our final destination.
So were there any popular tropes that you had to leave out for time or editing reasons?
We had a really great scene on the spaceship that we unfortunately had to cut, where Michael Ironside was going to make another appearance.
Oh.
And it would have been an appearance inside a body pit of like 1,000 corpses that April was going to be crawling through. And obviously it's a very huge scene, and just due to time and money, we had to cut it, and that's probably the one edit that I wish we still had in the film.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like it would have been cool. Any chance of having it be a DVD extra?
It's not. We didn't even shoot it.
Oh.
We couldn't shoot it because of time.
Yeah. Oh, that's disappointing. It sounds pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
So what is next up on your slate of creative endeavors?
Well, Cole and I are right now writing a sort of survival horror story set in the desert during an apocalypse that's going on. It's really more drama than it is horror, but it does have horror elements to it. And there's also talk right now of Grave Encounters 3 potentially happening if the financing side of things can come together. We actually have a very cool idea for the third movie. It's not just some crap that we're going to just shit out. We have an idea that we really actually think is cool and would make a really cool closing to the trilogy. And if that happens, we'll be returning both in the directing beat.
Nice. How far along away is the apocalyptic story? Because that's one of my pet genres.
It's pretty close. We've already had a first draft of the script, and now we're just cleaning it up. So, I think the script will be ready to show very soon. Very soon.
Excellent. Is it a collapse of society apocalypse or a zombie apocalypse? Or can you say yet?
I cannot go into specifics on that just yet. It is very scary, trust me.
Oh, scary and apocalyptic. That could be fun. Well, I will keep my eye out for that one, because, like I said, that's one of my pet genres. And I guess I'm looking forward to seeing how well Extraterrestrial does in theaters, because I can see where a lot of people will really enjoy this movie, especially from the visuals, especially from the unexpected slasher behavior of the Greys. And picky people like me will go, oh man, just one little tweak here and it would have been awesome. But you guys are doing some great, great work on the independent film side. So I have to give you major golf clap on that.
Well, thank you.
Where can people find you online?
On Twitter, we're at Vicious Brothers, and then on Facebook and all that sort of jazz as well. We're pretty good about Twitter and whatnot lately.
All right, well, I'm gonna send all of our slices over to tweet at you, telling me how wrong I am for not loving this movie. I'm like, I wanted to love it, I really did, but I did enjoy it. So that's good for everybody, right?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for your time today, guys. I will keep an eye out for Grave Encounters 3 and your Mystery Apocalyptic project. And we will return with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Quiet, please. Quiet. Please take your seats. Good morning and welcome to Technorama 101. Oh, dang, wrong class. All right, then. I am your instructor, Mr. Tomasi. My partner, Mr. Step, will be here shortly. This class is 16 weeks long, consisting of several units of study, including, but not limited to, offbeat news, hacks and strange stories, and our history unit we call Remember When. You'll be expected to visit the Media Corner on campus, and of course, the Geek Library for all of your research. Oh, and I almost forgot. Calling into the listener line will earn you extra credit. Now, if you open your browsers and go to chuckchat.com, you'll find links to Technorama there. Good. Let's get started. Who can tell me the three main characters in the Star Trek original series?
And we're back with more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and now my guest is Brittany Allen, who plays the lead April in Extraterrestrial. Some of you might know her as a Daytime Emmy winner from All My Children. But today we're going to stick with the science fiction horror elements that she, I guess, immersed herself in thanks to the Vicious Brothers. Welcome to the show, Brittany.
Thank you. Hi.
So, my first question is, how did you get the script? Did they call you? Did they just send it around and you said, ooh, I have to do this?
Well, Tiffany Mack, who was the casting director, reached out to my agent at the time because I think she knew my work from All My Children. And she said, here, you know, we're looking for this girl and would Brittany be interested in reading for this? So I read the script and I was interested immediately. I just connected to April right away, and I felt like it was a different kind of horror movie than I was used to reading, horror sci-fi movie, and it was just refreshing and exciting. And I called my representation right afterwards and I said, guys, I really want to be a part of this. And so I put myself on tape because I was living in I do live in LA. And the Vicious Brothers were up in Vancouver, so I sent them a tape, and we met over Skype, and then, and then I remember I got the call that I was going to play the role of April, and, it was just one of those things that felt right in every way from the start, and I just, you read a lot of scripts, and you try to fit yourself into every character that comes your way, but some characters come, and you just know that, okay, this person is very close to who I am, and you have a much better shot of getting it. And this is one of those for sure.
Was there something specific about April's story that you connected with immediately? Or was there something that's like, okay, yeah, I see a little bit of me in her. I can do this.
Absolutely. I mean, she's got a couple of rants at the beginning of the film, where, you know, she's in a place where her parents are getting a divorce and she's been with the same guy for about 3 years. And she's just really starting to lose hope in the possibility of love having any, you know, lasting ability, I guess. She's feeling really jaded about it. And I definitely can relate to that. And particularly at the time that I read the script, I thought, man, I've said these exact words before. It literally felt like her speech pattern was the way that I speak. And so that resonated with me. And then her journey, her journey, both, you know, throughout the night, and the strength that, that she cultivates, and just the places that she goes to physically were really exciting to me, but also her emotional journey and what she learns throughout the course of the night as she loses those around her and begins to realize that love is like opening your heart is actually a very strong and incredible thing to do. And I, all of those things really appealed to me in terms of April. And then the script itself, I was just entertained the whole way through. And then when I got to the end, you know, I won't spoil it, but it's got a pretty epic and unexpected ending. And that sealed the deal for me. I thought, okay, I'm in good hands here. These guys, you know, they have a vision and they're not afraid to surprise the audience and do something a little bit different with this genre. So it just felt fresh and exciting for me.
Was there anything special about any preparations you did before photography began?
I guess one of the unique things that I did was I worked with a trainer, which was something that I had never done before. He was a really awesome guy who helped me find my strength both in a physical sense and almost in a spiritual sense. And, you know, I really felt like April needed to have this inner strength that just comes out throughout the course of the night. And so it was a challenge for me because it wasn't something that I, you know, was used to doing in my life to such an extreme. And it was really empowering to do that and to push myself to new levels. So that was, you know, a new experience. And then of course, you know, it was understanding April and understanding the script and her arc. But at the end of the day, I really differently maybe than with other things that I approach. I just wanted to go on the journey with her. So some of the things I left up until I didn't want to plan things out too much, you know, I just mm-hmm. wanted to experience it as she was and grow with her as she did. So yeah, a lot of the exploration came on set.
Did you have to do any firearms training, or is that all you?
I didn't really have to do any training for it. It was. I guess I got shown how to hold a gun and how to load a gun, and you know, because the loading of the gun scene was pretty fun. And of course, you know, I learned how to do it about 20 minutes before we shot it, but I had to look like I was a real pro. And you know, the timing is a really kind of epic moment in April's turn where you kind of realize, oh, okay, she knows what she's doing. She's got this under control. And so I had to really nail it, but there wasn't too much training involved, more just kind of choreography and looking like I knew what I was doing.
And that was a scene that was amusing for me because I had already talked to the Vicious Brothers and they had mentioned like all the tropes. And one of those tropes is the guy always picks up the gun and starts shooting. And in this case, the guy didn't know how to work the gun and you just said, oh, give it here. And that I found that hilarious.
Yeah, me too. I really liked that. I liked that. I liked the way they wrote such a great female role, and that was just one moment where you get to see that she's not like that. She's just her own person, and she's the strong girl.
Yeah, I liked the strength at the beginning, and you see the despair leaking through in the middle, and then at the end, when everything seems lost, you say, okay, I now know what matters. I'm going to try to fight for it. Did you have to do anything extra in those steps, or did you just let it ride with the emotions that you were feeling?
I mean, there's definitely a lot of prep that went into it and a lot of just trying to really get my heart connected to her state of mind. We didn't shoot it chronologically, but I feel like we shot it chronologically enough that it was, you know, when I got to some of those scenes near the like three quarters of the way through the film and the end of the film, I had experienced everything else with her up until that point. So it was maybe a little bit easier to draw on those things that had actually happened. But yeah, I mean, there was definitely a lot of prep, but then in the moment it was just about being free enough and allowing myself to go there. And it's cool because I feel like I did transform as a person in the way that she did too. And ever since then, I feel like it kind of set off an opportunity for me to realize that, yeah, it's pretty beautiful to be able to like open up your heart to people and you don't have to be jaded, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, how much of the dialogue, I mean, did you stick strictly with the script or did the brothers allow some leeway with changing the words on the fly?
They were pretty relaxed about that, but I think we stuck to the scripts for the most part. I usually try to, you know, respect what the writer's written, and then if it's really not feeling right, they were definitely open to discussion. But I felt like for the most part, April spoke very close to myself, so I was able to, it kind of rolled off my tongue pretty easily.
It just seems like a couple of those scenes with Michael Ironside, it seemed like there was horsing around going on because he had this glint in his eye, like he was in on a joke that nobody else knew about.
Oh, gosh. I mean, he definitely is in general. But yeah, you know, I think he too kept very close to the script. But I mean, he just, oh, gosh, when he speaks, you know, in his work, it. Of course, this is what you hope for, but it definitely with him, nothing about it feels like a script. Nothing about it feels written because he's just so present in the moment in what he's saying as that character at the time. So, yeah, that's probably where that glint comes from. It's just his total devotion and the magic that he's bringing out, you know?
Okay. How intense was it towards, I'm going to say, it's not really a spoiler, but the scenes where you're on the alien spaceship and you're covered in goop and grime and you're literally filthy from head to toe.
Yeah. Those were both the most fun scenes to shoot and some of the most difficult. There was when I'm stumbling through the tunnel and I'm covered in the goo and I've just emerged from the cocoon. That was kind of a fun scene to shoot because they just let the camera roll for about, I don't know, a good 15 minutes at least. And they just followed me back and forth down the tunnel. So in that moment, I was able to just, you know, completely kind of black out everyone else around me and really believe that I was on this spaceship. And that was, I mean, that's just the ultimate when you can really throw yourself into the moment like that. So that was a ton of fun. And then I had another day where I was covered in the ultra slime and I had to do some pretty emotional scenes in that ultra slime. And that was more of a challenge because that stuff is not very pleasant to have all over your body and underneath your clothes. It was the kind of thing that when I went to bed that night, I still felt like it was on me.
So I'm not going to spoil too much. Actually, the Vicious Brothers already spoiled it in their interview, but the ending is both surprising and you should have seen it coming, but it's still surprising that they went there. What, if anything, of that ending did that say to you about the tone of the movie that was being made?
Well, I guess, I mean, to me, that ending took everything that may have been silly and rowdy and just entertaining and fun up until that point and suddenly made everything smarter, in my opinion, one thing, because I thought, wow, this is a strong stance to take within this kind of film, you know? It's definitely saying something, and I think that it reflects the Vicious Brothers, their kind of view on the world, and so I liked that came through. When I first read the script, I thought, okay, these are guys who aren't afraid to, you know, they'll give you something that's fun and they'll definitely take you on a wild ride. But at the end of the day, they're not afraid to state their opinion on things. I applaud that ending so much. I love it.
So what are you working on next? What's your next project that people can find you in? Are you hooked on doing more sci-fi and more horror?
I'm open to anything. I really enjoyed the sci-fi horror genre, and I'm definitely would, you know, be happy to jump back into that world again. But I also have a love of human dramas. There's a show I'm hooked on right now. It's a show called Transparent. And so that's definitely where I'm setting my sights on right now. But I also have a comedy. I got a role in a new show called Schitt's Creek with Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara that's coming out in the new year that I'm really excited about. I play a very, very different sort of character in that show. And that will be fun. And then I've got a couple of independent feature films too that should be making their way out into the world soon. One's called Look Again and the other is called Backgammon. So yeah, lots to come.
Lots on the plate for people to find you. Well, thank you for joining me today to talk about this unusual little indie movie that is interesting and fun and a little bit strange. I guess we'll see you in the future. Hope to see you in another horror movie sometime soon. Thank you very, very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Summer.
And that'll do it for this week's Slice of Sci-Fi. Feel free to leave any comments on our website, sliceofscifi.com, or get a discussion going over on Facebook. That's facebook.com/sliceofscifi. Sam Sloan and Laith Preston will be more than happy to engage you in any geeky debate. If you want to check us out on Twitter, we're at Slice of Sci-Fi and at Slice of Sci-Fi TV and at Slice News TV. You run a very good chance of running into me or Jeffrey live to tweet at. Other ways to give us feedback are still through the Slice of Sci-Fi app. Or you can record your own message, send it to summer@sliceofscifi.com. And you can also call our Skype line and leave a voice message. That number is 602-635-6976. That's 602-635-6976. And please keep donating. It does help. I am working on getting the website a little bit more robust. Every now and then it kind of falls over and cries for its mommy. And like I said, I'm working on that. Again, many, many thanks to everyone who stuck with us through this past year of transition. My deepest heartfelt thanks to Cy Fried for the awesome music they've provided us. And as always, we are happy you've stuck with us. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know what you want to hear more of for this show. We do this show for our own fun and education, but yours as well. So, with that, we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.